We bring on another guest today to discuss expectations for the upcoming Detroit Pistons season, but also what makes this team and this young core so much more special than any other team really heading into a season over the past decade or so. We'll talk about that in today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to our YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. We're on our way to 5,000 subscribers, trying to get to there before the start of the new season. Or if you listen to this on one of the podcast platforms, leave us a five-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. So just to give you guys a little bit of an update, something we're going to be doing, I talked about in the intro, for the next few weeks, you guys have already saw it for the last few episodes. For the next few weeks, I'm going to be bringing on people from within the Pistons community, try to get a beat writer or two on the podcast, try to get some people from outside the Pistons community, from, you know, outside. You know, from, I know a few episodes we had Josh Eberle from, I know he's from Canada, but I believe he's a fan of the Dallas Mavericks. But just get some guys from outside the Pistons community to give an idea and their expectations of the team. Get people from within the Pistons community to get their expectations of the team so we can get the varying answers. And we can kind of come, by the time the season starts, come to an understanding of where a lot of people are sitting and what's the overall feeling about this team heading into the season. And we're doing that again today with another guest. We got Jordan Lederman. I feel like a lot of you guys who are on Twitter will know who he is. He's obviously the runner of the Pistons Thoughts account that has 15,000 subscribers. Not subscribers, 15,000 followers. Same thing, though.
It'll do.
Jordan's a great follow over there. Make sure you guys go check him out if you're on Twitter, if you haven't already. I'm going to assume a lot of you guys already know who Jordan is. But we're going to get Jordan's thoughts because, Jordan, your account started in 2014.
Oh, yeah.
And like a lot of us Pistons fans, and like a lot of people who followed this team, we're going to start at some tough times. You've been through it all the last eight years. You've seen Andre Drummond. You've seen he who shall not be named. He was number six for the Pistons uniform. We're not going to say his name. You've seen a lot of things. You went from Blake Griffin. Now we're at Kay Cunningham, Stan Van Gundy, to Troy Weaver, all kinds of things. How do you feel about this team heading into this season, or maybe just heading into year three of the rebuild versus how it was in 2014 or 2015, or all the years that have gotten to this point of you being the runner of that account and being a big part of the Pistons community? How do you feel about this team now?
I feel a lot better. I mean, before now, it's been a lot of suffering, you know, lots of pain and just pure anti-joy. But I mean, for the first time in that time period, I mean, there's some hope and there's some actual hope on the horizon, and we like seem to be building it the right way. And granted, I've been a historical delusional fan, just like a lot of people on Pistons Twitters. You know, that's no shade. It's just is what it is. But this time feels different. This time feels like for the first time we actually have a young core. It's being built the right way by Troy Weaver, and like there's culture actually back in Detroit for the first time since 2007-08.
Yeah, it's been a long time, man. So we went through, like I mentioned earlier, we went through a lot of bad times, a lot of middling times, again, with Andre Drummond, Reggie Jackson, Blake Griffin. But this team, obviously going to year three of the rebuild, is being led by, I mean, you can go with their GM, Troy Weaver, or you can go with Kay Cunningham, obviously, the face of the franchise. What makes you, or actually, let me rephrase this question. How do you feel about Kay Cunningham leading this team and being the face of the franchise versus how you felt at the time? I don't know how old you were. I'm assuming you were a teenager around the time of Andre Drummond really taking over the Pistons and being face of the franchise. And then probably like into their early 20s when Blake Griffin was the face of the franchise for like a year or two. Just what do you think is the difference here and how you feel with Cade versus some of the other guys that we've seen come through the Pistons roster and be or try to be that face of the franchise?
I think A, I feel a lot better. B, I think like with Andre Drummond in particular, it was less so that he, you know, should have been the face of the franchise, and just like circumstantially they had to give him that max contract, otherwise he's gone. He ends up getting paid like a max player, even though he wasn't, not a player to build around, but he was sort of like, Drummond is like a, was a perfect like third, fourth option on a team, but he was being paid and put in positions to be the number one option, which was just like, I don't even blame him for that. Like, that's complete organizational failure. But so I don't think he was ever really meant to be the face of the, I never felt great about it, even though I thought he was a great player that could have been defensive player of the year, that sort of thing. But Blake Griffin, on the other hand, you know, like obviously his all NBA season here, but you knew he was running on his last legs. Like, the way he had to adapt his game was amazing, you know, how he expanded the game to the 3-point line and all that. But it's like, you could tell he didn't have much in the tank left, and especially come playoff time when he was playing on one leg, the last leg of his career. But so that was never a sustainable player to build around. It was kind of like, okay, like hopefully we get a couple good years out of this, but like nothing like Cade, where like you're starting from day one. Like, realistically, you have at least the next 8 years with Cade, 7 years with Cade, and then hopefully beyond that, you still got him. But it's like, you had like just the way he embraced the city, his whole team, and the way that he's just like a workaholic, like almost every young player seems to be on this team. I think it's a really good building block.
And you kind of talked about some of the other guys on the team that seem to be workaholics as well. How do you feel about this versus the surrounding guys versus some of the other surrounding guys? I mean, I think, like you said at the very beginning, this team seems like they finally have a young core. Is there any other time through the last 8 years of you being a hardcore fan where you can feel like there was another time that kind of rivaled this time in terms of having a young core or that you're excited about? Or do you think this is unique to most Pistons fan at this point?
I think it's totally unique. The only other like sort of comparable time was like the 2015-2016 season, where you got Reggie, Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, and all them, where they weren't like young, but they were like young and like entering their primes young, whereas we're starting like day one with all these guys. Like, I mean, we got 4, 5, 6 years to go before these guys enter their like primes, I think. But so I think there's just so much time. All these guys are on rookie contracts for the next 4 years, 3, 4 years, whatever it is. But no, I think this is possibly the first time in like Pistons history where they have 3 to 4 players in their first 2-3 seasons where they really, you could see them being around, being a part of winning teams in the future, especially here.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to throw this to you. I want to get your thoughts on this as well. I think one of the things that makes this so different and so unique is, and you kind of hit on it a little bit, is that you're starting from scratch with these guys.
Yeah.
And I agree that 2015 was probably the closest you'll get because you had a bunch of, and I'm going to call them young guys. They're all like 24, 25. That's young in NBA years, but not as like high schoolers, basically, like the Pistons are right now. And, you know, at that time, like you said, you had Reggie, you had Marcus, you had Tobias, you had Andre, you had Stanley Johnson, who everyone thought was like, he was like the big up and coming draftee.
Oh, yeah.
So at that time, I think that's the closest time that's rivaled it. But I think what's different about this one makes it so fun is that you're starting with scratch with just about every single one. Like, there's Marvin Bagley, he spent the first 2 or 3 years in Sacramento. But outside of that, almost all of your young guys that's a part of your legit core, you're going to get to see them from their rookie year, from their beginning. You get to see them not only grow as players, but grow as adults, grow as personalities, grow as people. And you get to see them from their, you know, their rocky starts, their growing pains. You get to see them get to where they go. And I feel like that kind of thing really draws an emotional attachment to a team and players when you get to see them grow.
Definitely.
I feel like one of the things that, like, and I don't want to talk too long about it, but just was like Blake Griffin was great in 18-19, but like he already had like 10 years before then. He always will be remembered as a Clipper no matter what he would have done with the Pistons.
Right.
So it wasn't that kind of emotional attachment. I feel like with this team, fans are really growing attached to this team because they're so young, because you're seeing them at the beginning and you're already starting to see some of them grow a little bit as they get older, obviously. Do you think that also has to do with it?
100%. Yeah, it's like, it's almost like, and I know like a lot of new people on Pistons Twitter, like they're young. Like none of them were here for the 04 championship and really haven't seen good basketball from this team.
I do want to point this out, and I know this may be a shock to you, but I think like 70% of my audience is not from Twitter. So a lot of them don't even have, they don't even know what Pistons Twitter is. So
okay.
That's why I think this is pretty cool too for some of you guys listening who are not on
for
Twitter.
Sure.
You guys get to see like the perspective, like, oh, what's going on in Pistons Twitter?
Right, right.
So keep going. I just want to point that out that a lot of these guys probably don't even know, hey, what the hell's going on here?
But
go ahead.
For sure. No, but I was just saying, like, so a lot of the like newer Pistons fans and a lot of people that wanted the teal weren't around for the 04 championship. And I think it's cool. Like, they sort of get to grow as Pistons fans with the team as they're growing as a team and the young players.
No, yeah,
so I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to segue into the next topic, which is going to be the teal jerseys. And I'm going to take a little bit of a twist on it when we get to it. Stay tuned for that. But first, I have to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, BetOnline.net. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check on all your sports betting needs. Find all your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports wagering information. From live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts, they have you absolutely covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about their trends and action today. And if you head over to BetOnline.net right now, you'll see that if you click on the basketball section, you already get a head start on this upcoming season by looking at who is the favorites, according to BetOnline, to win the NBA championship. And they got the Boston Celtics right now as the favorites. I don't agree with that. I don't know if that has to do with them possibly getting KD in a trade, if that's kind of swaying the odds here. Maybe they know something that I don't know. But if I had to go ahead and take my favorites, I think it would be the Milwaukee Bucks heading into this season. But that's the kind of thing you can do already at BetOnline.net today, or use your mobile device to learn more about their trends and action today. BetOnline, where the game starts. So I want to thank you guys again for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Lockdown Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or if you listen to this on one of the podcast platforms, leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. All right, Drew, I kind of want to say something real quick. You know, a lot of the guests that I have on, I've had like three or four from outside of the Twitterverse. Mm-hmm. I've had some people from the YouTube community. I've had two fans from just outside to just listen to it on the way to work, on their way to dropping kids off or whatever. I think it's always interesting because I feel like a lot of the Pistons Twitter people that I have on are so shocked that there's another verse of Pistons fans that aren't active on Twitter. And then also equally, like I've seen from reviews on the podcast, people who email me and comment in the YouTube section, also equally as stunned that there's just such a big base on Twitter too. So I always think it's cool to like try to intertwine these people with you know, having guests from Pistons Twitter, having people from the YouTube community, and having people just from the everyday life community. I think it's cool that there's so many Pistons fans out there that really don't know about each other, to be honest.
Yeah,
they like
yeah.
just don't know that there's so many of us. I think that's one of the coolest things I've came to see since hosting the pod, that there's just so
For
many
sure.
Pistons fans on so many different platforms and so different in so many different areas of life that I think is pretty cool. That's always one of the first things I realized when I record with someone from a specific platform. It's really cool.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. I mean, you're bringing it all together. But I mean, even as the Pistons get better, there's going to be more popping up that aren't on Twitter, that are on Twitter, and you know, all that sort of thing.
I had a few guests like a week ago and then 2 weeks ago. One of them was from Italy. One of them's from Mexico. I've had a few people email me from Australia. Like,
you don't understand.
There's so many Pistons fans growing because of this new young core going on. I think that's one of the coolest things about it, too. And then you have Pistons fans from everywhere. Like, it's shocking. You wouldn't think that the Pistons have fans overseas, but they have a lot of them. It's crazy.
Yeah, man. And a lot of the fans, I feel like, have been dormant, rightfully so, for the last 10, 12 years. And now they're starting to come out again.
And something that has come out again is the Pistons teal jerseys. They're coming back this season. I have to get your thoughts on them, man, because we've had some differing opinions on the podcast. Obviously, I think a lot of it, and we've talked about this on the podcast, I think a lot of it has to do with the age difference.
For sure.
I feel like a lot of the younger fans are extremely excited. I feel like a lot of the older fans are throwing up at it. And that I get the emotional attachment that some of the older fans have to it because of everything that came with the teal jerseys, some of the things that happened in the teal jerseys. all that kind of stuff. I get that. But just my opinion, I've said this many times in the podcast, just to give you an idea of how I stand on it. Jerseys are just supposed to meant to look cool.
Yep.
They're supposed to be appealing. They're supposed to look fun. And in my opinion, I think the teal are incredibly fun. I think they're super cool jerseys. I think they look nice. I don't care about a team's win-loss record. I don't care about what happens in the jersey as much. I just care if the jersey looks cool. And I think the teal looks cool. So what's your overall thoughts on the teal? Do you get why some of the older people – hey, maybe you might be agreeing with them. So I don't know. I haven't heard the opinion yet.
I get where they're coming from. You know, like I was too young to really be invested in the original teal era. But I mean, look, I designed my logo a few years ago with all of the teal I could find because the Pistons wouldn't bring it back. And I think, yeah, it's just, I mean, look at what the Grizzlies did. Their teal jersey is awesome too, the throwback. But I think there was a missed opportunity in these jerseys the first time around. And I think with this young, energetic, re-energized group and fan base and organization, I think it's the perfect time to bring that back and bring some new life into what I think is an awesome jersey that really didn't get a good run in the first place. And I understand where people are coming from the Bad Boys and being like, what the hell is this teal? You know, we're red, white, and blue team. Like, where is this teal coming to the color scheme? I get it. I understand the things that were around that at the time, but like, I think the teal is just so cool.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. This is the thing. I feel like I'm really excited about the teal. I like the teal, but I also have like a different opinion that I don't think I've seen many people have. I'm going to throw this one out. You just tell me how you think about this.
All right.
So I'm very happy that the teal brought back again. I think they're super cool. And oh yeah, I had to tell you guys on yesterday's podcast, they only came out with 8 of the dates that the teal will be worn. Turns out there's going to be 3 more dates. Let me go ahead and read you guys all the dates that the teal will be worn at home. You got October 28th at the Hawks, October 30th against the Warriors, December 4th against the Grizzlies, December 18th against the Nets. I think that's one of the newer ones that weren't talked about yesterday. The 20th against the Jazz, the 28th against the Rockets in January. I think that's another new one. February 3rd against the Hornets. I think that's another new one that we didn't talk about yesterday. February 4th against the Suns. February 25th against the Raptors. I think that might have been one of the newer ones we didn't talk about. April 4th against the Heat, and then April 5th against the Brooklyn Nets. I think that also is a newer one that we did not talk about. So those are all the dates that you guys can find if you guys want to go to the games that happen to be wearing the teal. Those are the dates right there. You guys can also obviously go to DetroitPistons.com. You'll find it on there in their content.pistons.com/theme night. You'll find it over there. But if you guys want to know where or when to turn into the games, those are the days that they'll be wearing the teal. But anyways, my opinion on it is that, again, I like the jerseys, but I want this team to eventually, and they're not there yet, obviously, but I want them to get to a point in this era where, and a lot of this is not on the players. This a lot falls on to basically the people who create the jerseys, market the team, create the logos, all those people. Mm-hmm. I want this era of young guys and this team, or whatever this team morphs into over the next 2 years. I don't know how many of these guys will be here, but overall, I want this era to have its own jersey. I want this era to have their own thing that they can hang on to, where you look at that jersey and you look at that logo, or you look at this style and you say, oh, that reminds me of Cade's Pistons. Like, if you look at the Bad Boys jerseys, you see their style, their logos. You're like, oh,
yep,
that's Isaiah. That's Zeke's Pistons. You see, like, the all-red jersey. That's just for me, how I look at them. I don't think any other Pistons fans really equate this with Chauncey's Pistons. But mm-hmm. when I see those all-red 2008 ones, I immediately yep. say, oh, yeah, that's the going-to-work team. That's the Pistons. Sure. That's Chauncey's Pistons. But that's that idea. I don't feel like any team, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the last 10 years – or even though they've been awful, if you see one of those jerseys, you're like, oh, that was one of the trash years. But right. I want the team to eventually have like their own one where 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the line, they're having their jerseys brought back by yeah, a future yeah. team that are like, oh, well, let's go ahead and pay tribute to Cade's Pistons. I want them to eventually get that going. So while I'm happy that the teal coming back, I want them to eventually get their own thing that they can hang their own hat on and not have to continually go back to the past and continue to bring stuff back. I'm cool with the nostalgia. You want to pay homage to some of the things that happened before you. I get all that.
Yep.
But at a certain point, you also want to kind of move on, look to the future, and kind of create your own pathway. And that's why I want this team to eventually get to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree. I think, though, at the same time, there should I like always having a throwback in there or something, you know, in the rotation. But yeah, I think, you know, the classic red or the blue and whites we got right now, which are, you know, the oh for the going to work teams jerseys. I totally agree that by the time this team is ready to take the next step, which could be in the next 2, 3, 4 years, whenever that is, I think for sure I'm with you. Like, I would love to see them their regular rotation jerseys just be something that's them. Yeah, that you can, like, this is Cade and Ivy and Sadiq's team or whoever's still here. I'm guessing those three will still be here. But, you know, I think I agree. I would love for them to have their own identity while still paying, you know, having some throwbacks in there and some alternates that maybe are more classic and clean and whatever it is. But, yeah, I'm with you.
Absolutely, man. I'm going to say this last thing. All my listeners know I'm going to continue to push this until it happens. I know a lot of my listeners don't agree. Some of them do agree, but I'm going to keep pushing this until they change their logo. I need the Pistons to change it. I can't stand their logo. I think it's the most bland logo in the entire NBA. Yeah. Like, this is just my opinion, and then we can move on to some of our expectations for the team. But how do you go from that super cool logo with the horse and the pistol, like a piston? How creative, how cool that was to a ball with Detroit? Like, how do you go from that creative to this bland?
I think that over the last few years, they've definitely gotten more creative with the jersey, like the alt jerseys and the court and the secondary logos. But I'm with you.
I think that has a lot to do too with Big Sean taking over the, I forget what exactly the department is that he took over, but I know he took over like the creative design kind of thing over there. So I think he may be with us here. He may be pushing for some of this stuff. Maybe we see some even more cool stuff come out. But when we come back, I want to talk about our expectations for the team. And there's something that Jordan mentioned that actually I'm going to throw back at him in this final segment. Stay tuned to figure out what that is. But first, you guys got to hear from some of our lovely sponsors. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. It's a great way to support the podcast, or another great way to support the podcast, if you're listening to one of the podcast platforms, is leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. All right, Jordan, before we get into our expectations, you said something that I'm going to put you on the hot spot a little bit.
Let's go.
And it can be a quick answer, because I know we really want to get to the expectations of this upcoming season. Sure. You mentioned that, you know, jerseys that will be remembered as, okay, Ivy, Sadiq's team, if they're still on the team, I think they'll still be here.
Yep.
Out of the young core, I want you to give me the players that you think, and you can say with confidence, you believe will be on this team in 2025. Give me how many names that you think will be here. So that's all 3 years from now.
Yep. Cade.
Okay.
Ivy. I think Sadiq is here unless he's part of like a superstar deal, which I don't, you know, foresee happening, but that's the type of deal, unless he completely regresses, but I don't see that happening necessarily. That's all I can confidently say. Like, me and you share a Killian agenda, but I can't confidently say he'll be here in a few years. I love Beef Stew. Same situation. I can't confidently say it. I mean, Bagley, that's the last year of his deal, essentially. We'll see. But yeah, I think realistically, it's Cade, Ivy, you know, assuming that he comes out how we expect him to come out, and then Sadiq. I don't see anyone as a lock beyond them three.
So I'm going to give my answer right quick, and then I promise, guys, we'll get into our expectations. Like I told you guys at the very beginning of the episode, we'd eventually get to. It's been a little bit. but my answer really is like a curve. It's like, so at the very top, 100% is Cade.
Yep.
And then after that, I think the closest one is Jaden Ivey. I agree. I think these two guys, they're going to build around them and try to make it work. Now, obviously,
for sure,
if they like don't fit together, I think then you start to see maybe a change happen in a few years.
Yeah.
But I think that it's pretty likely that Ivy will be here. I then think it drops off a tad to Sadiq, and it's because of the reason that you mentioned. I think Sadiq is, if they do pull a trade off, and
right.
For me, I've talked about this a lot on the podcast. We'll probably talk about it a little bit more in depth in the future. I should have to be honest, guys, you guys listening, I probably should have made an episode already talking about this. But I think Sadiq, if they do make a trade, and I do think they are going to make one at some point, maybe not for a superstar, but for a guy that will be ready to help them win and they think will take them to the next level. Sure. When they do that, I think Sadiq would have to be the main piece in order to get a deal done. Like, you're not throwing in Beef Stew. You're not throwing in Killian Hayes, Marvin Bagley as like a centerpiece for a damn all-star. Like, it's not going to happen. The team's not going to accept it. So I think any trade that happens in the next 3 years, the centerpiece would then have to be Sadiq. So just because of that, I think that's why he takes the next dip.
That's fair.
So Sadiq would be then. And then after that, I have one more player that I can confidently say that I think will be here. It's not Isaiah Stewart. It's not Killian Hayes. I think it's Jalen Duren. I think he's
right. Yeah.
I feel pretty confident about him being here. Though, again, it's not like as high as Cade and Ivy. I think it goes from Cade, Ivy, drop off Sadiq, and then a little bit of a drop off to Duren. And I think everybody else is a question mark and wild card. Who knows what the hell will happen?
Yep.
But that's how I feel about that. Anyways, let's get into our expectations now. So, Jordan, like I told you at the beginning of the podcast, and I told you a little bit about this before we even started recording, the last like 6 or 7 guests I've had on, I've been just recording podcasts with guest after guest after guest after guest. And the main question we keep asking all of them, what is your expectation for the Pistons this season? We've had some people from outside Detroit. They've been quite negative. One of them, one of them was even more negative than I thought he was going to be. Okay. Which is that's fine. That's fine. Everyone has an opinion. So some people outside the tribe, they've been pretty negative. You have some people within the Pistons community that I've had on are really excited. Some of them are pushing for a play-in.
Right.
And then you have the middle ground, which is where I'm at. And I'm not trying to pressure you into saying something that you don't feel.
Hot take.
The middle ground that I'm at is I think they can get a little bit better, but I'm not too concerned about their win-loss record. I don't expect them to be really competing for a play-in game. I don't see that in their team's future. Though I will admit that some of you guys commenting and all the people that feel like they could push for a play-in, you guys have caused me to go and reanalyze my and go relook at stuff just to make sure that I'm not like completely overlooking things. As of yet, I don't feel like I am. I still feel like they're not going to really compete for a play-in. But Jordan, where in that line do you fall? Do you fall in, okay, they can push for a play-in? Do you fall in, okay, I think they'll improve a little bit, but maybe probably not even be competing for a play-in? Or do you really think maybe outside of the people outside of Detroit so far I've had on the podcast think, yeah, they're just going to be really bad this year and they're probably going to be at the top of the draft again? Where do you fall in this?
I'm definitely more in the middle. So my thought process is their post All-Star break record last year, 10-14. That played out through a full season, gets them 34 wins. That's an 11 game improvement from last year, which is a huge jump. 34 wins, still short of the play-in game. Last year, I mean, the Hornets were the 10th seed at 43. So that might be a little high. Knicks were 11 at 37 wins. So even with an 11 win, so I'm projecting around that 34 win area, which is their post All-Star record, because they didn't really, I mean, they added Ivy, who's, you know, which adds a huge dynamic. But they really didn't do much this summer in terms of reshaping the roster, which I love. I'd rather they didn't this summer. So I think sort of this is the season you take a leap, you know, maybe an 8-12 game win jump. And then next summer is when you go for it.
Fair enough.
They have a lot of cap space. Yeah, that's what I think the plan should be.
I think definitely next offseason is going to be where they make their big swing, whether that's free agency or maybe taking on a contract that who knows. I think next offseason, though, will be whatever swing that is. You'll see that happen. My concern with them taking that kind of leap this offseason, just to give, or this next upcoming season, just to give you an idea of where I stand with it, is they're after the All-Star break record. That's legit. But I think some of the reason why I have concerns about it is because after the All-Star break, would you agree that their roster made more sense than it did before the All-Star break last season?
Yeah.
So you had Cade, you were bringing Killian off the bench, you were starting Corey Joseph next to Cade to try to get more spacing with Sadiq. You had Marvin Bagley with the lob threat, and then you had Isaiah Stewart, who started to take a little bit more threes.
Yep.
I think that helped a little bit as well. I think this upcoming season, and it's part of the reason why I'm not too concerned about it at all with the win-loss record, is that I could see Cade take a step. I can see Sadiq take a step. I can see Killian taking a step. I can see Stu taking a step. And I don't want to put too many expectations on Jaden Ivey because he's a rookie, so I'm just going to leave him as a blank.
Sure.
Who knows what he's going to be. I'm just going to leave him as a blank.
Yeah.
I think all four of those guys would take a step. But because I believe this roster still makes so much less sense right now, I think just simply the composition of the roster will hold them back. Like last offseason, I think after the All-Star break, they started getting a little bit more spacing with a rim pressure guy and Marvin Bagley.
Right.
It looks like to start the season, you probably will be having Cade, Ivy, Bay, and I think they're probably going to go Bagley, Stu.
Yep.
And no matter how good you think they're going to take a jump with Stu shooting outside shots, maybe he does. Super cool. We'll see if it happens. If Ivy can be a legit floor spacer, if he can, okay, super cool. I think everybody at this point objectively can say spacing is a serious issue in that starting lineup.
Yeah.
And Cade could take a step. Ivy could be good. And Stu could take a step. And I don't know if that still changes that, which is why I have concerns about them taking that big of a jump while still maintaining, though, that even if they don't take a big jump win-loss-wise, I still think they could still take a big jump development-wise, if you see what I'm saying.
For sure. And I also think to note with that starting lineup, the bench unit's kind of good. I mean, especially you bring Alec Burks into the picture, and he could realistically start with Ivy, and that sort of solves some of the spacing issues. Granted, I would prefer this season to just roll with Ivy and, you know, live with it. But I think also, I mean, it's really the big man rotation that's just like, what the hell is going on? And I do wonder if Troy, you know, moves Noel or Olynyk or someone before the season, or like for sure by the trade deadline, one or two of them is gone.
Yeah, I think I've said this before that I think Weaver is trying to show that this franchise is going to be player friendly and they do right by their players.
For sure.
And if they feel like that Kelly Olynyk and Nerlens Noel are just not going to play minutes for them and it doesn't make sense for them to play minutes, I don't think either one of those guys at a point in their career where they're willing to just be like veterans that don't play at all. Yeah. Like they're not at the point of the Udonis Haslams. I don't even think they're at the point of Corey Joseph. I think Corey Joseph have reached that point, and that's why he came back. He's cool with just being that veteran guy who comes in when you need him.
Hopefully is this year.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. We've already said if Corey Joseph finds a way to get meaningful minutes this season, we riot. But I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah. I think those two guys are not at that point. I think Troy Weaver will do right by them and move them to a team that they can actually play for at this point in their careers. I think that does good by them. It makes the Pistons look better that, hey, we do right by our players. We're not going to screw you over, that kind of thing. I can see that happening. And just real quickly, if they do take a big jump, I think that's super cool. I just think that would require – it would require Stu becoming a legit floor spacer. Yep. I think it would require Jaden Ivey being better from outside than probably a lot of people expect. And then, to be honest, I think the biggest thing that it hinders on, Cade would have to take such a big jump. Like, he wouldn't have to be just like, okay, he's good for a young prospect. He's great for a young prospect. Like, he would have to be legitimately, I think, a great player in the NBA. If it happens, super cool. I'd be ecstatic. But I think I just don't know if I can see it happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, all three of those things would really have to happen for that to go that way. But I think, like, LaMelo is a good Cade comp in terms of jump, and LaMelo is an all-star year two, leading Hornets to the play-in. I think that's something, I mean, and even like post-all-star break, you know, Cade was averaging like 21-6 and something. So I think it's definitely, I'm more confident in Cade's jump than anything else you mentioned, but I don't even know that Ivy needs to be a great or even a, you know, above average shooter at this point. But yeah, I think for Stu to work in the starting lineup with Bagley, I mean, alternatively, they could start like Bay and Livers or some, or Olynyk even, and something like that. And that's a weird lineup, but something like that.
I think with Jaden Ivey too, though, I'll say this. I think he has a chance. And like I said, I don't want to put too many expectations on him because I don't think anyone really knows what can happen this season, obviously. But I think the elimination of the take rule, and we've talked about this a lot in the podcast, I think that's going to help a player like Jaden Ivey more than like any other player on the squad.
For
like
sure.
He's going to be able to just obliterate teams in fast break, and you're not going to be able to, you can't just slap him and stop him from going. He's going to get free throws. He's going to get a lot of fast break points. I think maybe there's a chance that I may be overlooking that. Maybe him simply adding that addition to the team and that kind of change of offense maybe that really helps the team. Maybe they score a lot more points in fast break situations and transition. And maybe that's really, really score. And maybe I'm overlooking that. That could happen too.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing too. It's like if Ivy comes in, does that and is better than expected, like that changes everything off the bat, and like nothing else that needed to take a step forward needs to even make that jump, I think. But right, you can count on it.
So we're going to end the podcast with this. I have a question for you. I'm putting you on the hot spot again.
Let's go.
We're going to go ahead. Everyone listening at this point, I want you guys to screen record this and just save this so you guys can use this against Jordan later on this season.
Oh, boy.
But, all right. Which one of these things do you think is more likely this season? Considering everything going into this season, which one do you think is more likely? Do you think Isaiah Stewart shoots 35% from deep on decent volume? He's not taking less than 1 3 again a game. He's taking like 2 a game or something.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to shoot 35% this year from beyond the arc. Or do you think Cade averages 24 points a game this year? Which one do you think is more likely to happen?
Cade, no-brainer, but I do think that 35% from Stewart's possible. But I think out of those two, no-brainer, Cade's getting 24 a game. Easy answer.
So what's your expectation for Cade this season? Actually, we'll end it off with that. What do you think, if you had to predict his stat line this season, what do you think his stat line will be?
Let's see. Let me pull up his last year's stats. Let's see where we're at. All right. 6 points a game, 5.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists. I think two things need to happen for this stat line to happen. I think turnovers got to go down and just get a few more free throw attempts a game. And I think he's pretty instantly at 24, 25 points, you know, another assist or two. I think if the scoring goes up, the assists don't necessarily go up with it. So my final answer is 25, 6-6.
Okay. If I'll tell you,
that's
this
where one. I'm going.
If Cade gets 25, 6-6 in the second year, I changed my prediction on the play. I think if he can do that, they might be competing for a play-in team.
I think it's as simple as a few more free throws and bump the three-point percentage up a little bit, and I think that happens.
No, yeah, I completely agree with the free throw point. If he can add a few more free throws and get a few more free throw attempts going to the rim, which I think he's going to this year, I think that helps tremendously.
Yep.
But I think you just mentioned it. That's the other part is that I'm a little bit more – I'm not going to say concerned, but I still need to see. I completely believe that he's going to get more free throws. I think he got screwed last season.
Yep.
Where's the paper? Hold on. We had this last year. We put on the podcast. It was a petition we started. Give Cade some damn free throw foul calls. And I signed my name right here.
Man, it was ridiculous last year.
It was really bad last year. So I really do believe he's going to get free. I have all the belief and that's going to happen. I have a little bit more of a question mark about his outside shot.
Yeah, that's fair.
But if he does get the outside shot to like 34% on like pull-ups too, I think 25 points per game is achievable.
Because think about it, like 3 or 4 more free throws a game, he's up to 20, 21 points a game, and then just another couple threes.
Yeah, I think my expectation as of right now, if I had to predict, and this isn't like what I'd call a successful season, just what I'm predicting.
Yeah.
I would say he hovers around 21, 22 points, 7 assists around there, and 6 rebounds. I think I have him around there. I think that would be a good year. I do think that's me thinking what he'll do this year. If they do want to push for a play-in, I think your stat line would have to be the case. I think he would have to be averaging like 25, 7, 6 a game for them to be pushing for a play-in spot. And maybe he does it if he does, because Cade's a monster. He's going to be a future superstar. Maybe that happens this year. So who knows? But I want to thank you, Jordan, for coming on the podcast, man. It was a lot of fun.
I appreciate it.
Me and Jordan have known each other. Obviously, he's been on Twitter and been in the Pistons community for a lot longer than I was. But I've been known Pistons Thoughts, a lot of you guys will know him by, for a few years now. We have never, ever done a collab together. He's the only person, I think, in the Pistons community that's pretty big that I have not done a collab with. So this is our first collab ever. I think it was super fun, man. Thank you, Jordan.
For sure. I hope we get more in.
Yeah, make sure you go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you and some of the stuff. I know you got a podcast that you're trying to start going to. Go ahead and let everybody know where you can find you at.
Just Twitter, Pistons Thoughts. I got the podcast going again. I just threw out my expectation podcast recently. Hopefully I'm doing it consistently, but I can't promise anything.
All right, fair enough. I feel how that goes, man. I feel how that goes. But I want to thank you guys again for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We're free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Lockdown Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. A great way to support the podcast, or leave a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. Hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Let me know what you guys think about everything we talked about in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. Until the next podcast, though, I'll see you guys later. Peace out, everybody.